today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey there, it's me. It's Jim Lenihan here on Rockin' the Suburbs, the only podcast that matters. I don't know, should we try that as a tagline? It feels like it's been done. Anyway, on behalf of my good friend and co-founder and co-host, Patrick Foster, welcome to the show. Patrick's not here right now, as you can tell. We sometimes split up these episodes. Actually, it's become, you know, somewhat frequent. It means nothing at all. There's nothing to read from that about our relationship. The bonds remain strong. It's just, you know, after all these many years and as old as we have become, we're very tired. And so it makes it more efficient to split up the work sometimes. All right. But not that this is really work. This is fun. I'm going to talk about some concerts I have seen in college basketball arenas. And this was Patrick's idea, and he put out the call to listeners. I believe we have some listeners episodes also coming on this topic. And I really put some thought into this. Unlike most of the rest of my life, I really put some thought into this. And I think I came up with the definitive list. I think I have put together every show I have seen in a college basketball arena, I think. Who knows? There could be something I'm overlooking, but you won't know. You won't be able to fact check that on me. And I guess unless you went to any of these or any shows with me that I overlooked, but, you know, whatever. Let me know if I missed anything, if you hung out with me and you are willing to admit it. Okay. Now, let's see here. The first thing I want to say is, this is interesting because thinking of college basketball arenas specifically, that eliminated some arena shows I have been to, right? So I'm not counting any shows I went to see in downtown DC, right over there in Chinatown, at what is now called the Capital One Arena. It has gone by different names over the years. That's what it's called now. Although the Georgetown Hoyas play their home games in that arena, I would not call that a college basketball arena because the primary tenants are the Washington Wizards of the NBA and the Washington Capitals of the NHL. So that to me is a pro arena. Not going to count that. Let's see. Also, in the years in the 90s when I lived in Rockford, Illinois, there was an arena then called the Metro Center. Again, I think it has a different name now. It was about a 10,000-seat arena, I believe, right downtown Rockford. It was actually a pretty nice thing to have in a city that size, to have an arena. And a lot of shows came through there, but there was no college affiliation with that arena at all. And at that time, the only sports team that played there was a minor league basketball team called the Rockford Lightning, and they were in something called the Continental Basketball Association. So that's, I guess you would call that the primary tenant of that arena, but it was used a lot for concerts and, you know, other events like ice shows at the kids, you know, the Disney on Ice things, you know, the Globetrotters, various big craft fairs. I don't know. You know, whatever it was. You know how arenas work. Why do I have to explain this to you? So anyway, I'm not going to count those shows. But turns out, as I really went through the list here of shows I've been to, mental list here. There were quite a few I have been to that would be considered college basketball arenas. And I'm going to start with my hometown of Toledo, Ohio, and the very first concert I ever went to was in a college basketball arena, and that was Hall & Oates. Hall & Oates was my first show, and I looked it up. The beauty of Setlist FM is you can find the exact dates and often the set list from the show. So anyway, I found this one, Hall & Oates, March 6th, 1983. That was my first concert, which 1983, my gosh, I was already like 16 years old. So it was pretty late when I went to my first concert. But, you know, I've made up for it over the years. Because I was not quite 16. My birthday would have been the following month. So I was 15. Hall & Oates, went with my friend Carl Behrens and his older sister, I believe. Or an older sibling. Older sister, I think. Boy, oh boy. Okay. So there you go. Hall & Oates. Oh, and one thing I remember about that is that I bought a program. I think I still have it somewhere here in the basement. I bought a program. They used to sell like tour programs that had like photos and information about the band, and you know, it's like a glossy thing, kind of like you'd get at a baseball game. Back when, I don't even know if they do programs at baseball games anymore, but I bought a tour program. So there you go. Now, I did see a couple more shows here at Centennial Hall that I can remember. But before I get into those, let me tell you a little bit about Centennial Hall. It's now called Savage Arena, which sounds really goddamn cool, right? Savage Arena. But it's just named for some guy. I don't know. Some guy whose last name is Savage. I'm going to tell you about the Toledo Rockets, who play in Centennial Hall. And in all these cases, I'm just going to talk about the men's basketball teams. I think in most or all these cases, the women's teams play there as well. But let me just focus on the men's teams for the purpose of this discussion here. The Toledo Rockets, they have been to the NCAA tournament 4 times in their history, but not since 1980. It has been a long time, a big, big drought there for the Rockets. In all those 4 tournament appearances, they have been as far as the Sweet 16, and that was 1 time, 1979. So I was pretty young then, don't remember any of that. Okay. Getting back to more shows I have seen at Centennial Hall. Let's see here. February 1st, 1984, I saw Billy Joel. Yeah. That would have been, the Innocent Man tour. Oh, I should have mentioned Hall & Oates. That was the H2O tour. Okay. Billy Joel, that would have been the Innocent Man tour when he was doing his like 50 shtick. But anyway, the show was not all of that. It was a, you know, variety of hits from various albums, like any concert you may attend. And I don't remember much about that show. I think at one point he got up on top of the piano and sang, as Billy Joel's wont to do. One thing I do remember, I think that was the first time that I went to a concert where, without like an older sibling, I didn't have any older siblings, but all, you know, in the early shows that I would go to, you know, the couple early shows I would go to, usually there was a friend's older sibling who had to like take us, right? But by this point, cause like I said, I was already like 16 here in February 1st, 1984. So this was the first one where just some friends and I went, just us, like, and I drove to this show. So I had my driver's license. I loaded up some friends in my mom's 1973 AMC Hornet hatchback, and we went over to Centennial Hall and saw Mr. Joel. And I think, if I remember correctly, at one point on the way home, because, you know, my friends were just acting like idiots, as you can imagine, teenage boys to be. And I think I got kind of angry because I was trying to focus on driving and not crashing. Okay. Now, moving on here, January 22nd, 1985 at Centennial Hall, that was REO Speedwagon, folks, REO Speedwagon. And the only thing I really remember about this, now it's interesting, if you go to the Setlist FM page on this particular show, there's no set list listed. It's blank. That's because they rely on like crowdsourcing for these things, and nobody took the time to or has the memory of the January 26, 1985 Toledo, Ohio REO Speedwagon show. But I do remember that the radio station, the AOR radio station, FM 104, did a pretty cool thing after this show, which was that somebody, they sent somebody to the show who took notes of the set list. Or maybe they got it from the band themselves. I don't know how it worked out, but somehow they had the set list. And when the show was over on FM 104, they played, you know, the studio versions of those songs that REO played in order on the radio. And so we get in the car and head on out, and we could sort of listen review the show we just saw on the radio. Isn't that interesting little thing? I don't know. Anyway. Okay. Now, sticking with Northwest Ohio, I also went to one concert at Anderson Arena in Bowling Green, Ohio. Now, Anderson Arena was the home of the Bowling Green Falcons. They also have had four NCAA tournament bids in their history. The last one was 1968. And so even a little bit, even quite a bit longer than the Toledo Rockets. By the way, both those teams play in the Mid-American Conference, so they're rivals. Anyway, Bowling Green, four tournament bids, last one in 1968. It advanced as far as the Sweet 16 one time, and that was in 1963. So it's been a while since Bowling Green has seen much success on the hardwood there. So, but they did have a cool show. This was the second show I ever went to. So somewhere in that mix of Centennial Hall shows. Went to this show at Anderson Arena. I went with my friend Jim Petrillo. You may know him as EPJ. Some of you may know that. Echo Park Jimmy. I believe also there was an older sibling involved of the Petrillo family. And we saw the Stray Cats. Stray Cats, March 20th, 1983. That was like Stray Cats mania, right? And the opening band was the Bus Boys. So they were kind of riding high from the movie 48 Hours, and they had a song called The Boys Are Back in Town. And they were a pretty cool band. So there you go, the Bus Boys opening for the Stray Cats. That was a lot of fun. Now, let me tell you something about Anderson Arena that I just learned when doing a little bit of research here. It's no longer with us. It is has been replaced. It was replaced in 2011 by something called the Stroh Center, which I hope is related to the beer, but I'm not sure. And I read this little paragraph here on Wikipedia, which Patrick refers to as the source of all human knowledge, and I thought this was interesting. It says, after almost five decades of service to Bowling Green State University, it became apparent that Anderson Arena was at the end of its useful life due to limited accommodations. There were only two restrooms in the entire arena, and poor acoustics for concerts, and it lacked air conditioning. So there you go. I don't really remember any of that. I'm sure the place was kind of a dump, but it was it served its purpose for entertaining young Jim. Okay, now I'm going to move on here to my college years. I went to Indiana University in the mid to late 80s. And there at Indiana, you have Assembly Hall, fabled Assembly Hall. And not too many shows come to Assembly Hall because Bloomington, Indiana is not a big city. You know, it's a college town. And so, you know, while a lot of bands would come through there because of the college student population, you know, who are willing and eager to go to rock and roll shows, you wouldn't necessarily get the really big acts. Or if you did, you know, pretty rarely, right? The ones that would go to arenas, right? For that, you kind of need a city of some size. But occasionally, there would be shows there. And I, you know, here I have a story here about a failure and a success. So first of all, let me tell you that the Indiana Hoosiers play in Assembly Hall. Of course, the Indiana Hoosiers are in the Big Ten. Indiana has been to the NCAA tournament 41 times. 41 times, people. The last time just this year. And have won five national titles. Five national titles. Last one was in 1987 when a young Jim attended school there. So that was very exciting. Assembly Hall was also the home of the last undefeated season in men's college basketball. That was 1976. The Indiana Hoosiers undefeated the whole year, including the tournament and winning the title. So there you go. So Assembly Hall has seen a lot of good basketball, all right? But not necessarily a good concert, as evidence on October 2nd, 1985. That was Supertramp. Supertramp. Now, here's why I went to see Supertramp. Because that was my first semester at school, and I was majoring in journalism. And I decided the first semester that I would work for the school yearbook. Volunteered to work for the school yearbook. And I was assigned to write something up about the Supertramp concert. The Motels opened, if you remember the Motels. Well, anyway, this was a bit of a swing and a miss here for, or not a swing, that's the wrong analogy, an air ball for Indiana University. There was a group that brought in concerts. It was called Union Board, I believe. And they were like a student group, you know, with some kind of faculty advisor or something. But they had a certain budget and amount of money that they could spend to bring in shows. And somebody decided Supertramp would be a good idea. Supertramp, sort of classic rock band with that kind of weird falsetto. And, you know, I don't know. How would you describe Supertramp? It doesn't really matter. My point is, not necessarily a band that would have great appeal to college students, I don't think. Well, I think that was proved correct because this show tanked. Like, it sold very poorly. And it was a big deal that Union Board lost a lot of money on the Supertramp show. So, but I was there. Now, here's a better one. 1988, February 24th, 1988, I saw Sting at Assembly Hall. This was on the Nothing Like the Sun tour, which, a couple things I remember about this. One was that they set the stage so that it faced like the sideline part of the stand. So imagine, you know, most arena shows, the stage goes at like the end where the end of the court would be, where the basket would be. And then you have floor seats, and then you have, you know, people sitting on each side in the normal arena seats. And then, you know, the end. For this one, you know, basically they cut the arena in half. So they only sold half of the seats on along the sideline and then set the stage so it faced that way. Does that make sense? I don't know. Maybe they were worried, again, sort of low ticket sales for an arena show, you know, not enough students really to kind of fill the place. Now, but I gotta say, Sting was a big deal, big deal in 1988. But that's the way they set it up, and I think it worked out well. I remember that being pretty packed and a lot of fun. And by this point, this was would have been the second Sting solo tour, and I know that on the first one, the Dream of the Blue Turtles, he had like a really really hot band of a lot of like great like jazz players. I went and looked up for this one to see who was his backing band. And there were a couple of them those cats who stuck around for this tour, including Kenny Kirkland, who was a great jazz keyboardist. He was known, I guess, mostly for playing with the Marsalises, Wynton Marsalis and Branford Marsalis, who were a big deal at the time. Wynton Marsalis, especially, trumpet player. But also Branford Marsalis, saxophonist, he was on this tour as well with Sting. And both those guys, I think, were part of the Dream of the Blue Turtles stuff that was done. There was also a guy here, I'm going to butcher this name, Mino Sinelu. I'm sorry. Anyway, percussionist. I noticed you did a little research on him. He's played with Miles Davis and Weather Report and some other stuff. So he's kind of a big deal. And the others appear to be kind of like session players. But nevertheless, I do remember it being, you know, an interesting show because it had that mix of rock and jazz to it. And let me see. Let me look at the set list here on Setlist FM. And oh no, there's no set list on here. Well, anyway, I know that he played some Police songs too and sort of jazzed those up, so that's pretty cool. Okay. Now, in my Louisville years, when I lived in Louisville, Kentucky, as I mentioned, I'm going to skip over the Rockford years. I'm going to go to the Louisville years. My Louisville years, I remember going to one show at Freedom Hall. Now, Freedom Hall, big, big arena, with the primary tenant having been the Louisville Cardinals. And they played there from 1956 to 2010. They now have a new arena downtown Louisville. But back then it was Freedom Hall. Story history of Freedom Hall. Let's see, Louisville Cardinals have been to the NCAA tournament 43 times. The last time was in 2019. They haven't been so good in the last couple of years, but there's been reasons for that we don't need to get into. So some of those 43 tournament bids would have come since they've been in the new arena, but many of them, most of them, would have been during the Freedom Hall era. Let's see, the Louisville Cardinals have won 3 national titles. The last one in the Freedom Hall area would Freedom Hall era would have been 1986, but they did win one also in 2013, although controversially, there have been some issues with that title, and some people don't recognize it. I recognize it because I saw it happen, all right? It did happen. I watched it. They won. Okay, so anyway, there you go, Freedom Hall. The only show I think I've seen there was John Mellencamp, and it was sometime in 1999, I want to say, and Setlist FM didn't really help me out with this very much, so I don't have much information about this show, but I think that sounds about right. And we went with my wife Katie. We had floor seats, and we were both pretty good fans of John Mellencamp, and that would have been the era to see him, because he was still pretty big back then. You know, now I don't think, you know, he can't play rooms like arenas, stuff like that anymore, but back then, you know, he was, he had many hit records, many hit albums, and it was a lot of fun. It was a good show. I mean, you know, he had so many hit songs that it made for a great set. I specifically remember he played one song, the song called Key West Intermezzo, and there's a line about a girl from Kentucky, and that got a big round of applause there. Anytime you can say, you know, the name of a city or state that you're in a song, oh my gosh, the crowd's going to go wild, right? It's the most exciting thing for them. Okay, now, there was one more arena show, I think just one more during my Louisville years, or at least, you know, college arena. That would have been in Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, but I'm going to skip that for now and get back to that at the end. Let me move on. I just have a couple more here from the times that I've lived in Northern Virginia now for the last 16 years. Yeah. So one show I went to would have been at John Paul Jones Arena. That's in Charlottesville, Virginia. That is the home of the Virginia Cavaliers. I have no real connection to this team other than living in the state of Virginia. Although my good friend Bill Mulligan, he's an alum. So shout out to Bill. Virginia Cavaliers have been to the NCAA tournament 25 times, last time just this year. And they have won one national championship, 2019. So there you go. Now, the show I saw and made an effort to drive down to Charlottesville, it's a you know, a couple hours drive for me. The show I went to see was Bruce Springsteen, October 23rd, 2012. That's one of the now 7 Springsteen shows I've been to, I think, including one I just went to recently, but not at a college basketball arena, so I won't talk about that now. But this one was at a college basketball arena, John Paul Jones Arena. Oh, by the way, if you think John Paul Jones Arena is named after the bassist in Led Zeppelin, well, you'd be wrong. It's a different guy. Okay, now, Springsteen, the thing about this one, that would have been the Wrecking Ball Tour. I ended up going to 3 shows on that tour, and this was one of them, and went with my good friend Chris Wadsworth, who had not ever seen Springsteen before. We had good seats, and what's good about this is John Paul Jones Arena is about, I think, about 15,000 capacity, whereas, you know, most of the places Springsteen plays are probably going to be more like 20,000 because they're going to be like the big arenas in major cities, you know, stuff like the United Center in Chicago or things like that, Madison Square Garden, right? The big rooms, right? But here, Charlottesville, 15,000. So I kind of felt like that was exciting because it's probably about the smallest venue he's going to play, right? So, you know, at this stage of his career, right? So that was pretty cool. All right, so there you go. John Paul Jones Arena, Bruce Springsteen. And then the last arena here that I want to mention in Virginia is the Patriot Center. Patrick talked about this on his episode. That's over here in Fairfax. That's right here in the, just one county away from me here in the Northern Virginia area. Been to the Patriot Center quite a few times. It's now, it has changed its name. It's now called like Eagle Bank Arena or something like that. But I know it as the Patriot Center. It's the home of the George Mason Patriots. George Mason has been to the NCAA tournament 6 times, but it's been a while. Last one was in 2011, and their best run was 2006. They made the Final Four. That was a storied run, George Mason Patriots. So there you go. I've been to the Patriot Center a few times for other things besides concerts, including my daughter's high school graduation was held there. But we also, when the kids were little, we saw the Globetrotters there. That's, you know, always a winning ticket. And let me think. There was something else I went to see there. Yeah, maybe that was it. I don't know. But two shows that I could think of. One was Green Day, April 4th, 2013. Don't know what to say about that other than it was a ton of fun. Green Day is a really great live band, and if you get a chance to see them, you should. I've seen them 3 times at like 3 different venues. This one would have been middle size with those experiences. Patriot Center holds, again, I think about 15,000. I think it's similar. I think maybe it's like 10,000. I don't know, 12,000. Somewhere in between 10,000 and 15,000 is the Patriot Center. But anyway, Green Day, a ton of fun. Okay, and then another one, November 9th, 2013. Remember how I started off the this episode by talking about my first show ever back in 1983? Well, this, I don't know if it was my daughter's first show ever, but one of the first. And to take things full circle, the reason I went to the show was to take her and her friend. We saw Paramore in 2013. And, you know, I got to tell you, I had a blast. Paramore is a rockin' band. So, if you don't know them, you know, maybe it's not every, you know, older person's cup of tea exactly. I mean, they're a young band, but I don't know. They rocked the house. It was fun. I like them. So there you go. There's all those shows. Now, I said I was going to circle back to one other. There's a specific reason for that because this is going to give us some good playout music. Going back to my years in living in Louisville, Kentucky, my wife and I took a little trip over to Lexington, which is not that far. It's about an hour drive over to Lexington. It is the home of the rival Kentucky Wildcats. They play in Rupp Arena, a storied college basketball venue. Rupp Arena, that's a big room, and they pack it there. The Big Blue Nation. Anyway, I'll grudgingly tell you a little bit about Kentucky's success on the court. 59 NCAA tournament bids. That is a record, folks. The last one was just this year. And they have won 8 national titles. That is second place all time to UCLA. And their last title was in 2012. Okay, but I didn't go there to see basketball. I don't really want to be part of that. That whole thing, right? No. I went there, Katie and I went there to see Pearl Jam, April 21st, 2003. We saw Pearl Jam, and the thing I want to say about that is I have a 2-CD set of this actual show. This was, at the time, I think kind of a new thing that bands were starting, some bands were starting to do. I just think it's great. They basically recorded every show on that tour and then put some like CDs for sale up on their website of every show. So you could buy the one that you went to if you wanted to. I mean, you could buy others as well, but for me, this was the great souvenir, right? This is like probably the best concert souvenir you can get. I mean, you can get a baseball shirt with a 3/4 sleeves. You know, that's something that should be treasured, of course. But for my money, you know, what's really better than getting the show itself, right? That you can have. And so I am holding this in my hand here now. Pearl Jam, North America, 2003. And then I basically just put like a sticker that says this was show number 28 on the tour, April 21st, 2003, Lexington, Kentucky. And then lists all the different songs. So I just say, how cool is that, right? I mentioned this show to my wife yesterday, and she said, is that the one where we had terrible seats? And I said, no, that was U2. And that was in a stadium. And it was almost like we weren't even part of the show. Now, I will say my memory of the Rupp Arena show, as I mentioned, Rupp Arena is a big, it's like a 20,000 seat arena. I think we were straight dead on from the stage. I remember just being able to look ahead and see the stage, but we were, you know, on the other side of the arena, like in the seats that would, you know, not on the floor, but in the stands, at the other end, but like straight on view. Does that make sense? So we were pretty far. We were pretty far, and she's probably right about that. So there you go, college basketball arenas. For Jim. All right. I've taken up too much of your time here blathering on and on with my concert memories. But I'm going to leave you now with a little something from that Pearl Jam show, since I have it and you get to hear it. And I hope everyone else who has great memories of shows in college basketball arenas is sending in their audio files. You can, if you have the means and ability, most computers will do this, or phones, right? Voice memo. Just make an audio recording with your memories. You don't have to go on this long. Trust me. You know, if you just want to talk for a couple of minutes, that's fine too. What, you know, we can put together more than one per episode or whatever you want to do. Totally fine. Just send it to rock@suburbspod.com. That's the email address. Attach an audio file. Send that way. Or if you just want to call and leave a voice message, you can call our Suburban Party Line, 612-440-1984, and just leave a message there, and we can use that audio on the program. All right. Again, thanks to Patrick Foster for coming up with this idea. Thanks to all you for listening. It's Rock in the Suburbs, and we'll talk to you later. She's all empty canvas, untouched sheets of clay.
Another double-decker taco? Son, thanks. Coach?
Coach?
Now try the bacon double-decker tacos from Taco Bell. Two new ways to bring soft and crunchy together for one big sizzling taste.
A little something for the road, boys?